Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
This episode of Global Journalist was taped earlier this month on November 9th, 2012.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. The Cuban driver who somehow manages to keep his 1957 Chevy running on the streets of Havana is an iconic symbol of Cuba today. The communist country's economy has been crippled by decades of U.S. sanctions, but the people have a wealth of creativity, and they've learned how to make do with incredibly scarce resources. Another authentic symbol of Cuban identity is a small publishing house in a seaside town called Matanzas. It's just east of Havana, and the name of the publishing house is Ediciones Vigia, the translation is the Watchtower Editions. Inside an old colonial house, writers, artists, and volunteers have been publishing handmade books for 27 years. Since materials and money are scarce, Vigia repurposes discarded materials, paper from a local butcher, cardstock, yarn, fabric, leaves, even lace. And they craft and publish no more than 200 issues of each book and manage to keep their literary independence in one of the world's most repressive societies. Juana Maria Cordones-Cook has produced a series of documentary films about the evolution of the press and the production of Vigia books. She's a professor in the Department of Romance Languages at the University of Missouri, and she's joined us here today in the studio. Also with us is one of Cuba's most distinguished poets, Nancy Morejon. Vigia has published some of her works, and this year the Latin American Studies Association awarded her the annual Prize of Excellence. Nancy is also president of the Cuban Academy of Language. Juana Maria and Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us here.
You're very welcome. I wanted to talk a little bit about your documentary project. Can you describe, Juana Maria, how it came about?
Well, I have to tell you that in 2007, I started filming a documentary on Nancy Morejon, which we have recently finished. And I had already been exposed to the work of Rolando Esteves Jordán with Ediciones Vigia, and I was always amazed and falling in love with his books, and I realized the uniqueness of this project. And then I started inquiring, and I realized that there was no documentary work on them. And so I started planning very humbly to make one documentary and perhaps do a half an hour to 45 minutes overview of their production. But then we had the opportunity of working with a Mizzou Advantage Seed Grant that was very generous and allowed us to do a little bit more. And with the support of the Museum of Art and Archaeology, what started to be like a documentary, perhaps, and a half, we ended up making five documentaries. And the fifth one, which we have finished, we're just working a little bit more on the subtitles, is 7 hours and a half. It has been a documentary work full of challenges, but more than anything, amazing rewards that go beyond any challenge that we could have had.
All right. And there's an international conference this weekend here. Tell us about that and what's going to be happening here.
Well, this international conference and the whole project that we are doing with Mizzou Advantage, first of all, is a result of the most wonderful team of scholars I could have put together. I had a double criteria. I chose my colleagues with being of the highest academic caliber, but also great human qualities. And it has been my best experience in my 23 years of work at the University of Missouri. It has been nothing but positive. Everyone brought all kinds of ideas to the point that this project and the inspiration on Esteve's work has developed over 25 graduate and undergraduate courses at the University of Missouri that in different ways have been influenced by this aesthetics, which is incredible. And also now during the conference, there are going to be 14 exhibitions of, let's say, the art of the book. Right. Three of them are going to be on work by Esteve, and the rest, they are from children, from kindergarten all the way to university and graduate students who are involved in this. So all of this is going to be the frame for this international conference where we have scholars coming from all over who are going to be addressing the aesthetics of Mejía, Rolando Esteves Jordán, and also the art of bookmaking. They are going to be addressing something very important for artists, is how to commercialize art.
Right.
And we have some of the top scholars discussing all of these issues and how different, publishing presses through Latin America are doing their own work with books. And I'm still to this day find that what Esteves has designed for Mejía has not been surpassed.
Well, let's talk a bit about that. Nancy, could you bring us inside that old colonial house where they make these beautiful books? How it works? And what
First
it looks
of
like.
All, let me tell you that Matanzas in Spanish means killings. That's a very sad story that comes from the very, very beginnings of our history. And Matanzas, it's a city, a very special city, very known, very well known by the history of Romantic poets in 19th century. So this house where the Mejía Ediciones Mejía were born, is just in the middle of two rivers, Yumurí and San Juan. Because Matanzas, unlike Havana, has river, has a short sea, and mountains. Santiago does not. Santiago only has mountains and sea, and not river. And Havana has no mountains and has seas. So Matanzas is like a phenomenon of the possibilities of alternative culture. Mm-hmm. There were the history of very tragic poets that lived in 19th century, as I was telling you, just in the middle of the heart of the slavery. So I think that these people, these artists who have created Ediciones Mejía, they represent the tradition of upheaval and at the same time of identity and at the same time of alternative things. They were born just in the middle of poverty. And I think that what the touch, the magic touch of Ediciones Mejía come from a rich poverty, in the sense that their gaze upon little things, upon things that we have, go and gives us and returns to us things that we own and we create. So this is a very important trend in the history of the publishing house. Besides promoting young writers, young poets, and even established and mainstream writers.
Now, you could be published anywhere, being as famous as you are. Why do you accept being published by Mejía?
They approached me. That's a very important thing to tell and to confess. I always felt myself satisfied because I did have a beautiful book, and at the same time, I could not be submitted to bureaucracy. They don't know that word. So when a writer gives a manuscript to Ediciones Mejía, it's going to be, it's going to appear, it's going to exist beautifully. Beautifully, but at the same time, it's going to exist and it's going to have a function in our world, in our literary world. So that's very challenging, and at the same time, it's so encouraging. Mm-hmm. Because you have a quick book and at the same time a very beautiful book, and you feel free to do it. So I think that this quality of being alternative, the root and the heart of Ediciones Vigía.
Now, how would you describe, so the people who work there get the manuscript, then what happens?
Well, my understanding is that there is like an editorial board which gets together and decides what to publish. Then Esteves, as we call Rolando Esteves Jordan, takes the book and reads it. I'm repeating what he has told me. First, he reads it in a very, let's say, innocent way, and then he starts a dialogue with the content of the book. Then he starts also thinking about the author. I would say perhaps most of the authors are living authors, but he starts thinking and designing. Each book that he designs is very unique, different from all the other books. And he uses aesthetics that go all the way back to the Middle Ages, the Renaissance, coming to the 20th or 21st century. In his designs, there is a very strong symbolic element. I would dare to say that there is nothing that Rolando Esteves Jordan uses as designs in his books that doesn't have some kind of symbolic meaning. There is always a real reason. And in those books, besides that very interesting element, he always tries to insert elements of surprise. Like, for instance, there is a book by Ruth Bejar La Cortada, that you read it and you start seeing all of these very symbolic images, and it has to do with a sense of identity, someone who suffered the diaspora. And at the end, although in one of the last pages, there is a little envelope. You open the envelope and there is a puzzle, all parts of the body of a woman that has been cut up. That means divided by the diaspora. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the wonderful elements of surprise.
All right. What are some of you, Nancy? What are some of the Cuban themes that come out of this publishing house?
Well, they are very Cuban.
Yeah,
that's the very first thing they have, and especially Esteves. I agree about what Juana Maria has been quoting and outlining. He's a child of diaspora. In that sense, he sees at the same time Cuban culture as a whole. They work with a great sense at the same time of feeling of being in an island. Mm-hmm. You have there's a word which means love for an island, the condition of being in an island, insularity. Being an insula, which is a very old word for that, is very important for them. They are surrounded by two rivers, so nature, geography is very important for them. But Cuban issues too. The relationship between families inside and abroad, and the importance of showing the world that there is a powerful culture in a small town, in a countryside, in a province. Although I think Matanzas is very, very cosmopolita. It's very, mm-hmm. Although it's a small town with so powerful and with such great energy. Very near Havana and very near a touristic pole like Varadero, mm-hmm. one of the most beautiful beaches of the Caribbean. And Bahia has this magic touch for not being alienated from their essence, from their history, for their environment. That's very, very, very important. They are always linked to beauty, to poetry, and I think they are very loyal to the history of Matanzas.
And Juana Maria, can you add any to that as far as the themes that you like to see?
That I see. Well, I would like to add something, and as well as I agree with Nancy that this is very Cuban and the themes are very Cuban, they have also included many international writers, foreign writers, like Emily Dickinson, which is one of the most amazing designs Esteves has made among the many amazing ones, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and many French writers. International. Borges, you know, and so that is international side. But also, I think that it is also very Cuban in things because these writers are really wonderful Cuban writers, young and from older generations, and they're addressing Cuban issues that can be, for instance, related to religion, for instance. And you know the magic of the Afro-Cuban religions, which is beautiful. And Esteves has a marvelous job. Or, for instance, a more recent book where Nancy Morejon wrote the introduction of Natalia Bolivar, which is on Haiti. I cannot remember very well the name, but it was this book was done after the terrible, terrible earthquake. And the author went to pick up sands and little stones. And so you look at the book, and it is a crack on the earth. Okay, and then Esteves, who always is looking at the symbolic, everything that he does is meaningful. Mm-hmm. This is a very profound artist, okay? And so he inserted little pieces of sand, little stones, gravel, and it is, and then it has a lot of elements from the religion, too, from Haiti. And so there you have something that is a little bit foreign, but it is Caribbean. And let's not forget that Cuba is the pearl of the Caribbean.
Now, how would Nancy and Juana Maria? I'll ask you the same question. What are some of the obstacles that of getting poems and essays and books published in Cuba?
Well, there are many misunderstandings in terms of the relationship between writers and presses, and that's a very old issue. We have to say that they opened a path. In the sense that they approached writers directly, no industry in the middle, in between. And I think this is a great contribution of Bihia to the health of Cuban literature mm-hmm. and Cuban culture. And I praise the work of Rolando Esteves in the heart of the development of this UNIS Bihia life. I said that in my communication to this conference. I think he is a prince of our letters and of our arts.
And Juana Maria, the obstacles that these artists face in Cuba.
Well, I think that there is an obstacle perhaps artists face all over the world, which is on resources. Really, I think that one of the aesthetic strategies of here that Esteves keeps using is bricolage, which is a term that comes from Levi-Strauss anthropology, which is when people take elements, objects, materials, and repurpose them with a different use than originally intended. And so Esteves uses this in a way to defeat the challenge of lack of resources, and he creates absolutely beautiful, some exquisite designs that, you know, each time I go to look at a book, a new book, I always know I'm going to be surprised with amazement and delight to see something new that he has done with a terrible scarcity of resources. And I think that perhaps is one of the difficulties that at the same time has been the great fortune because it has been the incentive for Esteves to design these beautiful books.
And after he designs them, they're reproduced, and up to 200 copies are made. Can you talk about that, how that
Yes,
happens?
I would love to talk about that. In that beautiful house, you know, colonial house of where Ediciones Vigia is, in the bottom floor there's a huge room with several tables. And so there are a group of craftsmen, I would say, from 10 to 14, who are going to be working at different times with different elements. Esteves makes the design, And then he figures out how it needs to be partitioned, you know, for people to work. And then he instructs them exactly on what they are doing. I really have to tell with tremendous objectivity that Bihia is what it is, thanks to the great artistic creativity of Rolando Esteves Jordan.
Okay. The I'd like to wanted to, before I continue the conversation, I wanted to let everybody, remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. So please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at globaljourn. That's global, J-O-U-R-N. Nancy, if you don't mind, I'd love for you to recite one of your poems in Spanish, and then Juana Maria will translate for us.
Okay, it's my pleasure, my honor to do so. Well, I will tell it by heart in Spanish, which is my mother tongue.
Okay.
Mirar adentro. Del siglo XVI, data mi pena. Y apenas lo sabía porque aquel ruiseñor siempre canta en mi pena. Muchas gracias.
Looking within, from the 16th century dates my sorrow, and I hardly know it, because the nightingale always sings in my sorrow.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, you've been writing almost your entire life. I saw you had once, if I have it right, described yourself as a child of the revolution.
A child, a creature.
Can you tell us more about?
Yes, because in my poems, for instance, I do not make a photo of revolution. I do not reflect revolution. I talk about my own history, my personal history, the history of my family and myself. And I think I am a result, a creature of revolution.
And how are some of your experiences as a Cuban influence what you write? What are some of the...
I write to exist. I write to tell things that you cannot tell to someone just in the moment you meet a person. You know, it's a very special. I think that writing, it's a very irrational process. Afterwards, you come, you read, you put a technique, whatever, but it needs a kind of inspiration. I believe in inspiration. So it's a liberation at the same time to write and to see that things that you cannot achieve in reality, they are achieved in your papers and your pages.
And how has your writing changed in recent years with the big changes in society?
I think,
in Cuba?
For instance, my experience with Bihia has been very interesting because they are the editors that I love the most because they are sincere. They understand what I do. And my poems have been, you know, growing and going here and there. And there's always Bihia to listen, because they listen and they approach to you never with a commercial, in the bad sense of the word, with a commercial sense of writing and poetry. They are so transparent and they are so good people, I have to tell.
Okay. And who reads these books? And how do you, and I understand you, some of them are given to libraries.
I really believe that these are collector's books. I personally love what they are publishing. But if I want to read and savor and write like I love to write in the margins, there is no way I would do that to a Bihia book. I would go and either photocopy it or buy the text in a different form, because they are really art objects. But these are art objects that at the same time, in order to enjoy the aesthetics, we need to interact. You know, and so my feeling is that I would say the great majority of people who buy these books are collectors. they are lovers of the art of the book. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Yes, I agree, and I would like to add an information. I will never forget that being in London in the 90s, in the early 90s, there was a project that took place at the British Museum just in the Department of Rare Books about Vihia. It was a Hispanic specialist at the British Museum, and it was, I think, one of the very first exhibitions of Bahia's books.
Okay. And I know that few of us have been able to go to Cuba, and just know Cuba from photos and films. Nancy, how would you describe what it's like living in Cuba?
It's like living, you know, it's my homeland. I don't know if this is important or not for other people. For me, it's very important to recognize a homeland as is the sightseeing you have chosen to live. And that's it. And I love many other cities in the world, but the one, my favorite is Havana. Or maybe Matanzas, why not?
Okay. And you, from an outsider's view, what is it about Cuba that that makes it special?
Well, I have to tell you that I started working on Nancy Morejon's poetry almost 20 years ago in March, next year. And as I started working on her poetry, I became more and more interested in Cuba and on Cuban writers and artists, really. And in 2001, I started going to Cuba repeatedly. I find that it is a very interesting country. Sometimes it is painful for me because I see the difficulties and challenges of people, which sometimes are the same and sometimes are different from here. And at the same time, I see the tremendous creativity, the tremendous cultural development, and that really makes it a very interesting combination.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to say that we've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist. Joining us today were Juana Maria Cordenas Cook and Nancy Morejon. Our program is produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Our program is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. Now stay with us for Free Press Watch and join us again next week for another Global Journalist.
And now Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalists, where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Raven Mirage. Today's news comes from the Committee to Protect Journalists and Reporters Without Borders. A prominent Cuban journalist was arrested for her critical coverage of the government. Officials charged Yaramis Flores with anti-state crimes after she wrote about the government's response to Hurricane Sandy's destruction on the island. Flores' arrest led to protests and detentions outside a Havana police station. She was released 2 days after she was charged. A freelance journalist and spokesperson for the Aguan United Peasant Movement has been forced into hiding after threats on her life. Carla Zelaya was captured and tortured in late October. The election process in Honduras has created a tense environment for journalists. There has been little progress in the investigation into an arson attack against a prominent radio journalist. Radio Popular was set on fire along with its manager, Fernando Vidal, at the end of October, and four suspects were named as perpetrators. Chaqueño Cuenca plotted the attack. He allegedly hired five men to torch the radio station but not kill its manager for 2,000 bolivianos. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalists.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalists. My name is Raven Mirage.
The episode of Global Journalist that you just heard was taped earlier this month on November 9th, 2012.